You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, the UFC is getting ready to head back to Fight Island for several weeks. But first, one more card to wrap up the summer season in Las Vegas at the Apex, headlined by a bitter grudge match, years in the making at 170 pounds, as we welcome you to the UFC Vegas 11 preview show here on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the Prince of Positivity himself, Alex K. Lee, AK. It's finally here. Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley. The trash talk has been rampant for years, but finally the score will be settled inside the octagon. I guess my question is, where would you gauge your excitement level now? Because this would have been obviously been a much bigger fight 2 years ago, probably would have headlined a pay-per-view and did bonkers numbers, but I guess, does it still have the same cachet now as it would have then?
Mike, are you asking for my weighted gymnastics-esque score for this potential score for this card?
Yes, I'm circling around to that.
This 14-fight card, pay-per-view quality card, if everything hits, man, I think this could be a 9.5. A 9.5 on the degree of difficulty scale. And now keep in mind, I call it the degree of difficulty scale for a reason. A lot of things have to go right. That main event hopefully is not a snoozer. Again, we've had some, I think people would agree that Tyron Woodley's last couple of main events have been a little hard to watch. Whether you're a fan of Woodley or not, they've not been the most entertaining fights. And then again, we have some fighters who we'll talk about later seem like they're being set up for spectacular performances, but there could be a letdown there. So 9.5 if everything goes right for the OC. Mike, I do want to ask you a quick question before we proceed, and that is, you mentioned that this would have been like a pay-per-view card 2 years ago. If this was a pay-per-view card today, if the UFC ever had pay-per-view shows without with non-title fights in the main event anymore, what number do you think it would draw? How many buys do you think this would get in today's climate? If there was no ESPN Plus and we're talking about traditional pay-per-view model.
If they built this card the way they have built it, I don't think it would have done very well, if we're being honest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it would have done okay. Would have done like in the 354 range, because Colby draws eyeballs, different sets of eyeballs. We're in a different climate here in 2020. So I think you'd get a decent amount of buys, but man, without a title fight and this fight not really being built the way I thought it should have. And I understand UFC 253 is coming up next Saturday, but I don't think the build has been that great, to be honest with you.
Though 300 to 350,000 buys would be a very good buy in today's relative to like to how the pay-per-views have done were doing before ESPN Plus. Anything, by the way, of course, non-McGregor, non-like John Jones. 350,000 for two guys who are not really proven pay-per-view draws, I think that'd be pretty good. So that's why I think you and me and a lot of people in the media are saying like, this is like a pay-per-view level card.
I would agree with that. I mean, the main event, there's just, you can just run back old promos, old interviews. I mean, just look at the promo from last Saturday. Yeah. It was just like old interviews with Colby on What the Heck, Colby on the MMA Hour, Tyron on the MMA Hour. Like, just, it goes back that long. But both guys are looking to get back in the win column here. Woodley's lost his last two. Covington's coming off the loss to Kamaru Usman in a fight that he feels he got hosed by the referee on. Most people see it differently, but it was definitely one of the best fights of 2019 to wrap up the year. But both of these guys looking to fully get back into the title picture, Covington especially. When you look at this matchup from like an X's and O's perspective, what sticks out to you?
Man, it's hard to not just look at this like we saw the Usman fight and like we saw the Gilbert Burns fight. It's Covington can fight that style that those guys brought against Woodley and more. If anything, this pressure, this nonstop pressure in your face style that we've seen that has been the foil of Woodley, that has been such a bad foil. That's Covington's specialty. The wrestling is probably about even. Whatever takedowns we see, they probably will not lead to much control. I'm not expecting that anyway. It'll be a lot of work against the fence, a lot of grueling work in that sense. Battle of cardio, which again, I would put Covington up against anyone at 170 pounds when it comes to having a deep gas tank. So. And not to take away from Woodley, but we have to look at him as being past his championship days, probably past his best days. And just from a mental standpoint, if he cannot get himself motivated for this matchup, it could be another dreary 5-round performance. I hate I am the Prince of Positivity. And I hate thinking about the worst case scenario for Tyron Woodley, but we have to be realistic based on what we've seen from Covington in his recent performances and Woodley in his recent performances. So, X's and O's wise, I think it's going to be a lot of Covington getting in his face and Woodley trying to take him out early if we see him explode in this fight at all.
It's interesting because most people feel, I mean, in this division, with how loaded it is, this is a super important fight for 170 pounds for both of these guys. Like, Colby's coming off the one loss, but if you go down two straight, you're in big trouble. And if Woodley loses going down three straight, man, that's bad news. That's preliminary card, open up a main card status. Almost, I don't like the word gatekeeper, but he's kind of in that position where he's going to be the litmus test for some of the up-and-comers at 170 pounds, but a win makes Woodley a player, at least at 170 pounds. A loss, devastating for sure. But this is a guy, AK, who has made a name for himself in Strikeforce, his early days in the UFC, just ferociously finishing guys. His last TKO/KO win was over 4 years ago when he won the title against Robbie Lawler. He hasn't been able to pull the trigger in his last couple of fights. That's what everyone's been noticing. Like, even the Gilbert Burns fight, we thought he might come out of it in the second round, and he never did. But when you have a guy like Colby and it's gotten this personal, do you feel like this could be the one where we see that aggressive vintage Tyron, or do you think we're going to see more of the same here?
I can't help but expect more of the same. I don't know. Maybe I should go on a limb here and say, we're going to see the old Tyron. We're going to see him fly out of his corner and land a huge right hand early on and send a Covington tumbling head over heels like Randy Couture and Tim Sylvia. But it's just really hard for me to believe that. I think I was just thinking about today. We're in the media. We're fans. We study the sport. We watch a lot of the sport. But there's no way, unless you're a former fighter, we'll never know emotionally the level that you have to get to, that you have to take yourself to in your mind to even become a professional fighter in the first place and then compete and win at this level in the UFC. And when you lose that ability, what kind of letdown is that for you emotionally? How much do you change as a human being, as an athlete, as a competitor? So sometimes it just goes. And when it goes, it might be impossible to bring back. So for me, it really looks like that it's a cliche, but that ability to pull the trigger for Woodley is gone. I don't think it matters who he's fighting. I don't think it matters the storyline. I don't think it matters. The most best training camp he's ever had, however you want to put it. He's working with Jorge Masvidal now, however you want to put it. Once that cage door closes, something has to switch on. You know, you know, some people have a whole different persona. Some people are a little more still themselves, but something has to switch on. There's a change. No one is completely themselves, the same person they are outside the cage as they are inside the cage. And I don't know if he can switch that on anymore. And if he can't, then that's the reason we've been seeing the Woodley we've seen in the last two fights.
He has mixed things up a little bit with his camp. I mean, he went back to St. Louis, his old stomping grounds. He brought up Masvidal. He's working with Gerald Meerschaert, and Meerschaert said the only times that he's worked with Tyron ahead of a UFC fight this much was the Darren Till fight and the Robbie Lawler fight. So maybe there's something superstitious going on there. We'll see. But on the flip side, one of the big storylines heading into this fight is that Colby Covington, a little bit quiet, a little quieter than usual. He has spoken a little bit more this week. We have seen some of that brashness, but we haven't really seen the over-the-top Colby Chaos Covington we've been accustomed to seeing heading into these big fights. Why do you think that is? Why do you think he's kind of kept things close to the vest here?
Well, Mike, you know Colby, I think, as well as anyone in the media. At least you've spoken to him so many times. So I think you know him as well as anyone can, his public persona. I think even he has to be a little bit delicate with how he approaches his usual sort of divisive shtick heading into this fight. Let's be honest. You know, again, that social unrest in North America right now is very, very real. And he knows that. And there's sort of times when he could play up that aspect, that right-wing persona and have it be, you know, still have it just looked at as an act, still have it be looked at as selling a fight. But now that we've had so much violence, so much protests, so much, it's very, very, very real. He knows he wants to sell fights at the end of the day. Okay, he wants to sell himself, yes, but he wants to sell fights. And I think there's a point where it becomes beyond palatable, certain things that you can say. And I know he said some things at Thursday's press conference. Tyrone's a racist, but it was so like he almost looks like he had to. He had to sneak it in there. I don't think there was a lot of conviction behind it. I think he was more pleased with the you know, the only race that matters is the race to retire Tyron Woodley. That's it. That I think that part he's more proud of. Otherwise, he was kind of just kind of keeping with the rhetoric enough, but he does not want to chase people away. People say all the time, I don't want to mix politics with sports. And yes, he's been doing that for a long time. But at this moment, I think he really wants people to watch his fight with Woodley. And I don't know if he knows how to sell a fight in a traditional way anymore. So that kind of led to this kind of flat approach, you know?
Interesting. I assume you're going with Covington from what I've been hearing you say. Yeah. Does Colby get a finish here, or does he do what he normally does and have a dominant decision? How do you see this playing out?
No, I'm definitely firmly in the camp of, if you think the fight is going to end inside the distance, then I think your pick is Woodley. And if you think the fight is going to go the distance, which I think a lot of people are, then the pick is Covington. It's also possible, I would say, you know, late TKO for Covington. Maybe at some point he just outlasts Woodley and lands a series of unanswered strikes, forcing the referee to step in. So that kind of knockout is certainly in play. But otherwise, yeah, I just see him following the Burns blueprint, the Usman blueprint. Just being real up in Woodley's face, real nasty, and just wearing him down for 25 minutes and putting on another convincing performance to keep himself right in line for that another big fight, whether it be a title shot or a fight with Masvidal.
I think we are going to see the vintage Woodley, at least flashes of it, okay? I think Woodley is going to have his moments. I think at some point early in the first or second round, he's going to crack Colby Covington. I think he's going to drop Colby Covington. But the big question is, if he can't put him away, how's he going to respond to that? Because Colby's tough, super durable guy. Yeah, he got finished in his last fight, but he was still defending himself, even with his jaw all messed up. He was still in the fight. Like, you can argue that was a questionable stoppage. Was it the right call from a fighter safety perspective? Yeah, I mean, I could agree with that, but Colby was still going for legs and still in the fight. So he's a super durable guy. So if Woodley hits him with his best shot and cracks him and can't finish him, that's what I think things are going to turn around. I think Covington will outlast him. I think he will start to turn it on second half of the fight. And I think he cruises to a decision probably for the last 12 and a half minutes or so. I think Colby wins the majority of the fight, but I think Woodley's going to give him a scare.
Yeah, and I think that's the best case scenario as far as people looking for an entertaining fight is we get that early Woodley burst of excitement. And again, like I said, a knockdown would change in the early rounds, would change the whole complexion of the fight. Because even if, let's say, Woodley lands that big hit in round one, and then the next two rounds is like all Covington, it would still be in the back of people's minds. You know, they'd be like, oh, but Woodley hurt him in round one. He's in the, you know, we saw the old Woodley. So I think as far as making a compelling fight and potential fight of the night winner, then that is the really the best case scenario. Woodley fast start, Covington battles back, and then we get the quote unquote championship rounds with both guys really just reaching deep down to pick up a win. So I'm the prince of positivity, but unfortunately I'm not as optimistic as you, Mike, but I do like the scenario you've laid out, and it is certainly possible.
Yeah. Before that happens, we have a super fun co-main event. Donald Cerrone taking on Nico freaking Price. I mean, these are two exciting guys that just want to get in there and fight each other. Like, there's all smiles, hugs, no trash talk. Wins and losses don't even necessarily matter here. These two guys just want to get in there and bang. They want to put on a show. I mean, this is the definition of a fan-friendly fight, AK, is it not?
Just get either one or two $50,000 bonus checks ready. Right? This is like, as soon as it was signed, they should have had a clause in their contract, which is like, you know, just tack on another, don't worry about the bonus, tack on another $50,000 automatically, and then also give us a chance to win fight of the night. Because, yes, this is exactly what you want in a co-main event. Again, as we said before, this has been a great pay-per-view co-main event. Two guys standing, banging, always bring great attitudes. Nico Price especially is just super happy to be fighting Donald Cerrone. He's like a fan. He's like a fan got picked out of the crowd to go, you know, spar five rounds with Donald Cerrone and just super excited about it. Except he's actually going to go 15 minutes in a real fight with Donald Cerrone, and he still has that same level of excitement. So there's no welterweight quite like Nico Price. It's going to be a great fight. Again, I think it's either someone gets a finish that wins a $50,000 bonus, or we get the 15 minutes of nonstop action we're looking for. A lot of smiling. A lot of hugs and handshakes at the end, just a lot of good times. And really, one of those fights that's going to make us feel the absence of a crowd. There you go, I'm being a downer again. I don't know why, but there's just a part of me that I want these guys to get these athletes to get the love they deserve. And this is a fight that I think from beginning to end would have people standing in the crowd. Now we're not going to get to see that, sadly.
This is going to be what Donald Cerrone versus Yancy Medeiros should have been. Mm. Okay. There's going to be a lot of talking. Yeah, some high fives, but I don't think we're going to be stopping the action every 30 seconds to give hugs and be like, oh, you know, great jab, buddy. I think they're just going to go in there and have fun, and whoever falls, falls. I think it's going to be kind of what that should have actually been before it turned into kind of a love fest on Madero's side and Cerrone got the finish. But I think it's going to be fun. I'm going to make a bold prediction here. Donald Cerrone is not only going to get back in the win column, he's going to get a finish in this fight. Third round submission. That's what I'm going with. I think Cerrone.
Third round submission.
I think these two are going to bang it out for a while, but eventually Cerrone's going to use that underrated ground game. He's going to get it to the ground, and I think he's going to tap him in the third round in an absolute classic. What do you think?
Nico Price, only one submission loss on his record, though again, he doesn't have a lot of fights that really end up going to the ground, so that may have something to do with it. It's kind of weird. I said I'm expecting a finish, and I'm picking I think I'm also leaning towards Cerrone. Don't hold me to that. I've not made my official pick yet, but my gut does say Cerrone. I just think he's the better fighter on paper. I'll go Cerrone's second round knockout. It's kind of a safe pick, kind of a boring pick. You know, you go with the whole Cerrone slow starter story, and then by the end of the round, the action picks up, and then by round two, Cerrone kind of finds his range and picks up the pace a little bit. So, yeah, I'm going with the kind of the generic Cowboy Cerrone win blueprint. But you know, so again, like I said, there's not a lot about this fight that I think is going to be unpredictable on paper. I think it's exactly what we want it to be, and I think in the cage, it's going to be exactly what we want it to be. So, yeah, so I'll go with the safe prediction there.
And then before that, in a fight that has stolen seemingly all the headlines this week, it's finally happening, AK, the return of Khamzat Chimaev. We've been waiting for this since Fight Island. Every single preview show, every single post-fight show, every single on to the next one has mentioned Khamzat Chimaev in some way, shape, or form. He is about to fight the wily veteran Gerald Meerschaert in a middleweight bout. It's the featured bout. Things have gotten interesting. Gerald Meerschaert feels not only disrespected by not necessarily by Khamzat Chimaev, but he feels disrespected by the UFC and disrespected by Dana White. He feels like he's got something to prove here against an 8-0 savage in Khamzat Chimaev. This is such an interesting fight. The veteran versus the prospect. What do you think when you see this fight outside of the pretty darn good trash talk we've seen this week thus far?
I'll say this. If they are trying to motivate Gerald Meerschaert to beat the holy hell out of Khamzat Chimaev, they couldn't have done a better job than say, one, you know, there being so much hype around Chimaev, and then also having him be the first of two fights booked. I think if you're, like, again, I think if you're Damian Maia, you're probably not as bothered as much. You're like, you know, whatever. But if you're the first guy, it's like, what? Hold on. It's like, wait a minute. You never do this for anyone. You don't book your elite fighters with to have more than one fight, much less, again, a prospect, a guy who's 8-0 as a pro. And you're telling me that, oh, he'll be ready to fight again in a short amount of time after he goes through me? Gerald Meerschaert has 44 professional fights. Okay, this guy has seen it all. He's seen everything that Chimaev has seen twice over. Okay, so he's very right to be disrespected. I thought he had the right response at the press conference on Thursday when Chimaev was like challenging his black belt credentials, and Meerschaert was like, "Look, if you choke me out somehow, I will find a black belt and I will give it to you." I think Chimaev was saying he's just a blue belt. So I thought that was a fun little pre-fight boast. But man, this is I think anyone who's heard me talk about Chimaev, I'm torn on it. I think I love him as a prospect. I hate him as people touting him as this like already unbeatable fighter. I hate when anyone, and not him in particular, I hate when anyone this early gets that kind of buildup. He's someone I want to see fight. And like I said, we're glad we're seeing him. His first fight in, it's only been 2 months since his last fight. So third fight in whatever, 70 something days. And I know we're all excited and intrigued, but again, I want people to not be, you know, disappointed if Meerschaert gets a win here.
There's a couple of things I'm very excited about this fight. One is that it's become a little bit personal. These two are back and forth. The face-offs have been very entertaining. But the fact that Gerald Meerschaert finally gets to show his personality. Like, I've been interviewing Gerald Meerschaert for probably 5 years now. He's one of the best interviews in the game. I've been saying this for a long time. And now that he's getting these different platforms coming on this show, he's on ESPN. Everyone's doing interviews with him. He was great at the press conference. The guy's got the gift of gab. He's a huge pro wrestling fan. He learned the gift of gab from watching promos in the pro wrestling world. And you can tell that he knows what he's talking about. And one of my favorite comments from Meerschaert when I interviewed him was, listen, you felt disrespected. Dana White addressed that after the Contender Series, said, listen, we're not trying to disrespect him. And Mearshart's answer was, you ever see Talladega Nights? And Ricky Bobby was like, you know, you can't say no disrespect and then immediately say something disrespectful right after. That's how he feels. He feels like he's got a point to prove. This is the fight that's going to motivate him to do something great. I'm not saying Mearshart's going to win, but there's a lot of people out there. I've seen him in the comments, seen him on social media, think that Khamzat Chimaev is just going to run through Gerald Mearshart like butter. I think this fight's going to be a lot closer than you think. I wouldn't be shocked if it goes the distance. I'm going to throw that out there, but this is a fight where two guys that finish more often than not. It's interesting. I don't even have a pick here. I can't pick one because I think it's so evenly matched, and I'm surprised that Gerald Mearshart, even so, the lines are starting to even out a little bit, but Mearshart is a 3-1 dog is super surprising.
Yeah, I am leaning towards the Swedish-Russian Ricky Bobby, as you put it. I believe Ricky Bobby's neckline was with all due respect. I think he would say so Shamsa's like, with all due respect, I'm gonna choke you out. Don't be offended by that. And it's like, well, it doesn't work that way. You can't just say that stuff. I am going to choose whether I'm offended or not, frankly, sir. And I think that Mearshart kind of had that tact at the press conference where, you know, Chimaev's kind of trying to be a killer with a smile. You know what I mean? He's trying to have that, oh, I'm just saying I'm going to smash you. No offense. And I'm glad Mearshart really didn't put up with it. Mearshart was just kind of like, okay, well, you can't talk to me that way. I'm a grown man, an experienced fighter. You can't talk to me that way. I'm leaning towards Chimaev by decision, I think. I think we will see that elite wrestling on display. I don't think he has necessarily what it takes to put away such a strong and experienced guy like Mearshart. I think it will go the distance, and I'm leaning towards Chimaev in a performance that will both make him look good as far as, again, people getting to see that world-class wrestling, and I think have people understand why we may want to temp our expectations here, because, again, I think Mearshart's going to show a lot of stuff in the ground. He's going to really challenge him down there, and that's good. I think for a guy like Chimaev, that's what he needs in his career. So I think people viewing this as sort of a showcase step-up fight, I don't think they're going to get exactly what they're looking for.
Yeah, I think it's perfect matchmaking. This is the test that he needs, and Mearshart's got some fire in his belly. It's perfect matchmaking. Rounding out this great main card, we got Johnny Walker versus Ryan Spann. Mackenzie Dern is back against Randa Markos. Kevin Holland versus Darren Stewart kicked off the festivities at 8 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN and ESPN+. And then we have 8 fights on the prelims, which starts at 5 p.m. Eastern. That makes me very happy. It's under the radar fight time, AK. There's a lot to choose from here, a lot of highly competitive matchups. We did have a couple of shakeups to get us ready for this one, but what fight or two is really sneaky to you that people aren't really talking about right now heading into tomorrow night?
Mike, I know what you're going to pick, but I'm going to lean towards two other things. And I'm going to go to the prelims because, look, I think everyone sees that this is a really stacked main card. Johnny Walker, you know, a shot at redemption against Ryan Spann, who is looking to go 5-0. That guy's a prospect that's just trending up and up and up. The return of Mackenzie Dern, always very exciting. See how she does against veteran Randa Markos. And Kevin Holland, super exciting fight with Joaquin Buckley last time. And he faces a tough guy in Darren Stewart. So main card, I think, goes without saying. You could pick any one of those fights and call that one the sleeper. But I'll lean towards, I like both the flyweight fight that's closing out the preliminary card between ranked flyweights Jordan Espinosa and David Dvorak. I know saying ranked flyweights is kind of a funny compliment because there's only, I think, like 18 or 19 contracted flyweights. And so almost everyone's in the top 15. But these two guys are deserving of their spots. Very exciting fighters. And I also, like, I have to shout out my Canadian prospect, TJ Laramie, who finally got a contract off of the Contender Series. People have been saying he's been UFC level for a long time, and he faces Derek Minner, another tough guy who got a really difficult draw in his first UFC fight against Grant Dawson. So two fights right there I think could steal the show, but these prelims are just really, really full of intriguing and potentially exciting matchups.
I like seeing Damon Jackson back in the UFC.
Yeah.
Mirsad Bektic had a...
Yeah.
Had a hell of a face-off. I think that fight's going to be great. You know where I'm going with this. New England all the way. Randy Costa versus Jurnee Newsom. Those two guys, I mean, like I said on the weigh-in show, visible circle. They're going to stand in there. And as Jed Meshew says, they're going to throw them bolos till one guy falls. Love that fight a lot. But I'm going to pick a fight that people are talking about, but I think it's going to be even better than people think. Mackenzie Dern versus Randa Markos, I think it's going to be better than people think it's going to be. Most people think Dern's going to take it down and try to submit her. We're going to spend a lot of time on the mat here. I don't think so. I think we're going to see these two throwing bombs at each other for the majority of this fight. I think Dern eventually will get it to the mat and take control. But having Jason Perillo, on your team now. Your stand-up's got to improve. And usually with these fighters are getting hyped up and they start to see improvements in the stand-up, they like to showcase it a little bit more. And Randy Marcos wants nothing to do with the ground game. So I have a feeling these two are going to slug it out. It's going to be a lot more exciting than people think. So this whole card is good. Like, it's so good. There's not a bad fight on it.
Yeah, normally when we have one of these cards that's like, again, 14 fights. I don't remember, 14 fights. It's a lot of fights. I know not everyone watches all of them, but guess what? We do. Normally, I'll kind of roll my eyes and go like, oh, couldn't this have been 12? And couldn't they have moved this card, these two fights to another card? This might be the first one of the like most loaded cards in the wild where I actually am looking forward to every fight. There's not a fight happen. People might say, oh, what about Tyson Nam and Jerome Vera? Like, who are those guys? Like, look, Tyson Nam, of course, a veteran for a long time and just a super exciting fighter. I think anyone who's even vaguely familiar with him was really excited when he got his first UFC win. It was such a great moment. If anyone knows Tyson Nam, just how long it's taken him. And Jerome Vera, talented guy, 25 years old only, making his UFC debut. So we kind of discussed before, sort of replacing Matt Schnell. This was supposed to be Matt Schnell, Tyson Nam last weekend, I think, and it fell through. So he's not really replacing Matt Schnell, but he is getting Tyson Nam a fight. So young guy has a lot to prove. And even Andre Ewell and Aaron Rivera, let's shout them out as well. That'll be the second fight in the preliminary card. Ewell, having a talented guy, has a lot to prove after kind of a shaky outing against Jonathan Martinez, which he was lucky enough to get away with the decision. And then Aaron Rivera has just hit the ground running in 2020, really making the most of his UFC opportunity so far. So yeah, really, again, like I said, we could spend another 30 minutes if we want to just talk about the prelims and the potential storylines and repercussions of these fights. So that's a sign of a good card.
You couldn't wait to throw out Rivera back to back.
If they both win, in the future. these fights are at 135. They're both at 135. So if Aaron Rivera beats Andre Ewell and Jerome Rivera beats Tyson Nam, it's tough. If that happens, we could be getting Rivera versus Rivera. Wait for that call out onto the next one this weekend. I will bring it up.
Jerome's a flyweight though, so I mean, if he wants to stick around 35, I'm in. But I think it's a no-brainer. You're absolutely right. But just like watching this card is a no-brainer. Make sure you check it out. Like I said, 5 p.m., the prelims kickoff, Eastern Standard Time, ESPN and ESPN+. And then all the way through till it's all over. I'm very excited for this card. 14 fights. We're going to have an overload of mixed martial arts action. And then it's on to Fight Island on Sunday to get you ready for UFC 253. But we will have all of your coverage of UFC Vegas 11. Fight results. All the interviews backstage, Jose Young's Boots on the Ground. We'll have your post-fight show. On to the next one on Monday. We're going to have you covered right here on MMAfighting.com as we put a bow on another preview show for Alex K. Lee. I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.